It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price, investigating the investigators.
They are freaking out right now, and Durham's doubling down, and good for them.
That is our top story this Friday. The Russia probe is now a criminal investigation. U.S. Attorney General William Barr has ramped up his findings into the origins of the Russia investigation. Political analyst Laura Podesta says some Obama-era intelligence officials could be in some hot water.
This decision will allow the prosecutor overseeing the case to subpoena witnesses, to enlist a grand jury, and possibly file criminal charges. So this is essentially a political win for President Trump, who for 2 years has attacked the Russia investigation as a hoax. The president, we know, has repeatedly insisted the Russia probe was started by, quote, deep state intelligence officials who wanted to prevent his election.
That's political analyst Laura Podesta. Talk show host Dan Bongino says former CIA Director John Brennan could be the first to fall.
Brennan's freaking out because he realized he's on record lying the entire time. He was the founder of the feast in this whole thing. I believe he even lied to FBI agents about where he was getting this information from.
House Democrats accusing the president of using the Department of Justice as a tool of political retribution. But Texas Republican John Ratcliffe says this is justice. And it's about to be served.
We're going to find out who was telling the truth. At the end of the day, I think that those of us that have said that this was not a bunch of nonsense are going to be vindicated.
The latest developments allow Special Prosecutor John Durham to impanel a grand jury, issue subpoenas, and file criminal charges. And where those charges go might surprise a whole lot of people.
Did Barack Obama know that the intelligence agencies were seeking to delegitimize his successor? At what point did he know?
That's Fox News host Geraldo Rivera. California is on fire. That is the other big story this Friday.
This fire just keeps growing.
Wildfires burning on both ends of the Golden State today, forcing thousands of people from their homes. More than half of California's population now under a fire alert.
We cannot let our guard down. We are going to fight this aggressively.
I can see the whole structure's on fire.
My mom's ashes are in the house. You start thinking about all the things that you can't get back.
A new wildfire started last night an hour north of L.A. Cal Fires. Jonathan Cox fears it's only going to get worse.
Our biggest concern right now is we have an anticipated wind event coming in this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, that looks to produce some potential winds that were as strong, if not stronger, than last night.
And with those high winds, PG&E warning customers of more power outages this weekend. Scott Stranfell is with that utility company.
We do think that it will be the strongest offshore wind event this season by a large margin. And if models are correct, possibly the strongest offshore winds that we've seen in years.
Officials say there are 9 active wildfires now burning on both ends of California. The U.S. leaving more troops in Syria to protect the oil fields there. Defense Secretary Mark Esper.
The United States will maintain a reduced presence in Syria to deny ISIS access to oil revenue as we reposition for the next phase of the Defeat ISIS campaign.
No word yet on how many U.S. troops will be stationed there. The funeral for Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings taking place this morning in Baltimore. Former Presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton are there. So too is former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
He had little tolerance for those who put party ahead of country or partisanship above truth.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also in attendance today. Elijah Cummings died last week at the age of 68. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard will not be seeking re-election.
I'm grateful to all of you, the people of Hawaii, for allowing me the honor and the privilege of serving you in so many ways over the years.
The Democrat says she's leaving Congress to focus on her bid for the White House in 2020. President Trump in South Carolina today praising new criminal justice reforms. Former NFL player Scott Turner helped craft the legislation into law.
The thing that I like about this legislation is that while citizens are in prison, they have the opportunity to take vocational training, to be educated, to learn new skills and new trades, so that when they do get out and reenter back into society, they now have the education to take on jobs and make an honest living to support their families, which in turn helps our community.
The president's initiative is called Second Step, and it helps inmates transition into society upon their release from prison. He'll be in South Carolina later this afternoon. A decision by the Catholic Church tomorrow could allow married men to become priests in a remote part of the Amazon.
The question the bishops have to answer is, which is more important to the Catholic Church, having the Eucharist and the sacraments or having a celibate clergy?
Thomas Reese is with the Religion News Service. Kids and sleep, the experts say, they're not getting enough.
A survey of some 50,000 children from 6 to 17 years old says less than half are getting the recommended 9 hours of sleep on weeknights. Cleveland Clinic pediatrician Dr. Ellen Rome says 9 hours leaves a child better equipped for the day.
That means stays on task in school, doesn't melt down at the end of the day with mom and dad, is happier, and is just flourishing.
She says the trick is finding balance between activities and rest, something she says is a win for the whole family. The study is presented at the American Academy of Pediatrics National Conference.
That's Peter King reporting. A new study shows 1 in 5 kids in the U.S. today is overweight. That very same survey also shows less than 4 in 10 kids are involved in youth sports.
Kids growing up have lost the joy just to play a sport. Today it's all about getting recruited. If you're a 7-year-old and you say, honey, let's go throw the ball around. No, I'm not that good. You're 7. Of course you're not that good. They lost the joy and passion.
Fitness expert Jake Steinfeld says kids who are active are also more successful.
I go to places where no one goes, and I'll tell you this. We put a fitness center in an elementary and a middle school, and it's amazing to see what happens. Test scores go up, gang violence down, teenage pregnancy down. There's this upward spiral of success.
Steinfeld partnering with Corporate America to install fitness centers in schools all across the country. The experts say 70% of kids today stop playing sports by the ninth grade.
There's so much good that can come from participating in team sports or even individual sports in terms of discipline, regulation of your time, and teamwork.
Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute in Houghton, New York. Still to come this Friday, Amazon eyeing buffalo hunting and drinking in New York and the Tree of Life shooting 1 year later.
Good afternoon. The weekend is here. It's a 50-50 proposition weather-wise. I've got forecast details straight ahead. I'll look for you in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania Friday, October 25th. Early voting starts tomorrow in New York, and a historic day. The first time ever voters in the Empire State have been able to cast ballots before Election Day. Former Chemung County Executive Tom Santulli hopes it translates into a higher voter turnout.
55% of people vote on average in national elections, and in off-year elections, it's around 45%.
New York, the 39th state to adopt early voting. Leslie Danks-Burke is with the Trailblazers PAC.
Anytime you get more people able to participate in voting, it's a good thing.
New York state residents are encouraged to visit the State Board of Elections website for hours and locations of the early voting, which will wrap up on Sunday, November 3rd. Deal or no deal, a tentative agreement between the United Auto Workers Union and General Motors still is not settled after a couple of plants in western New York gave that deal a thumbs down.
Other plants, especially those in Michigan, have voted more in favor of it. There's still quite a few left to go, so like any other election, they say it's still too close to call.
Labor expert Art Wheaton at Cornell University says if the deal falls apart, it's going to be a black eye for the UAW.
People voting it down expecting a better deal may get surprised that the next deal could be much worse than what they got.
GM plants in Buffalo and in Rochester voting down the latest offer from General Motors. Starting next year, the legal limit for drinking while hunting will be lower in New York. Governor Cuomo signing the legislation this week that reduces the legal blood alcohol level from 0.10 to 0.08. That's the same legal limit as driving a car.
I think it's good. I mean, you have to be responsible if you're going to consume alcohol.
Gun expert Tim Nelson.
There's nothing wrong with making the limit a little bit lower if you're going to have firearms in your possession.
I think it's a good idea. People shouldn't be out drinking and with guns anyway.
Brian Thayer from Rochester has been hunting for over 30 years. New York now joins four other states in lowering the legal blood alcohol level for hunters. This Sunday marks 1 year since a man shot and killed 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. It's left many in the faith community there still very much on edge.
It has not slowed down. If anything, it's getting worse.
Religious leaders gathering for a security summit in Harrisburg yesterday to talk about ways they can make houses of worship more safe.
They're sharing best practices and tools that the religious organizations can use to harden themselves as a target versus being a soft target.
The Anti-Defamation League says Jews are the most targeted group right now, but attacks on mosques and churches have virtually all religions are trying to keep their worshipers safe. Pennsylvania's transportation secretary says she will not cooperate with the Trump administration's request to gather citizenship information for the next census count. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
PennDOT Secretary Leslie Richards wrote to the Census Bureau saying her department won't participate in the project. According to an Associated Press survey, more than a dozen other states have already declined to participate. The Census Bureau began asking for 5 years' worth of driver's license records in August, promising the information will be kept confidential. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Pennsylvania in line to get more than $53 million. It's part of a nationwide settlement with a British company that once distributed a drug used to treat opioid addiction. State Attorney General Josh Shapiro says the money will settle allegations that the company defrauded Medicaid and other state health care programs. An Amazon delivery station in the works for the Buffalo area. Here's Family Life's Dee Helly.
Amazon Logistics announced yesterday it plans to open a delivery station in the Riverview Solar Technology Park off River Road in the town of Tonawanda. The new station will reportedly allow the company to speed up deliveries for people living in Erie County. According to a news release issued by the company, Amazon will create hundreds of part-time and full-time jobs. The new 127,000-square-foot delivery station is expected to open in 2020. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Thank you, Dee. Big boom today in Shamokin Dam, PA. Part of the old power plant in Snyder County came crashing down. Two of the old coal stacks at the Sunbury plant were brought down in a controlled explosion. Dozens of folks on hand to watch those old coal stacks come tumbling down. Officials say once the debris is picked up, the remaining two coal stacks will be demolished, and that'll happen sometime next spring. Throwing some pigskin around last night. Sunny time. 2 minute drill.
Yeah, Thursday Night Football, a battle of former teammates as the Vikings beat the Redskins 19-9. Kirk Cousins, 23 of 26 for 285 yards against his former team, the Redskins. Adrian Peterson, a former Viking, rushing for 76 yards on 14 carries for the Redskins. By the way, a little history for Adrian.
He leapfrogged LaDainian Tomlinson and Jerome Bettis here tonight, and he saluted the fans. That was cool.
And Peterson now just 400 yards behind Curtis Martin for fifth place all time. The Viking crowd gave him love, and he had to hold back tears.
Obviously, it was bittersweet because, you know, you come here to win a game, you know, but just coming back and seeing the love that they still have for me and they showed, man, it felt good.
The Vikings won their fourth straight to improve to 6-2. The Redskins fall to 1-7 at the halfway point of the NFL season. The World Series resumes tonight in D.C. Nationals host the Astros in Game 3. Astros down 2-0. A.J. Hinch.
This lineup has found a way to catch momentum. It's the World Series. It's two of the best teams in the league competing to try to get to four wins. I understand that. But there's no gloom and doom with us.
Yeah, Anibal Sanchez starting for the Nats. Houston countering with Zach Greinke. Dave Martinez says they're enjoying the ride.
They pulled together all year. Like I said, we had some adversity, but it built character. And they believe in what we're doing is the right thing, and they're playing really well. And they're all excited.
It's the first World Series game in the nation's capital since 1933. To the ice, Madison Square Garden, Rangers routed the Sabres 6-2, Rangers snapping a five-game losing streak and snapping Buffalo's three-game winning streak. Sabre head coach Ralph Krueger.
I agree, you know, chances weren't that different on either side. It was just the tight that we gave up were way too big, and we were not hungry enough on the opportunities we had.
In Chicago, Flyers cruise to a 4-1 win against the Blackhawks, and the Islanders stay hot, beating the Coyotes 4-2. The Isles have won five in a row. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Friday, the boys are back. Capital Connection crew on the way, plus less talk and more action. Welcome to the 5-Hour Workday.
Why would medical professionals give patients what they think they want instead of what they need? How the fear of being politically incorrect is creating a whole new category of victims. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In a strange sort of way, a recent Sky News story reminded me of Luke 11. That's where Jesus asked whether if your child asked for a fish, you'd give them a snake, or if they asked for an egg, would you hand them a scorpion? Well, here's the headline. Hundreds of young trans people seeking help to return to original sex. The story featured a woman who, after publicly admitting regret over her so-called surgical transition, was contacted by hundreds of other people in her part of England who felt the same way. One of those people, Ruby, also struggled with eating disorders. One would think that the combination of gender dysphoria and eating disorders would suggest to medical professionals that Ruby was suffering from body image issues. But, as she told Sky News, the doctors never even suggested there might be a connection there worth exploring. Instead, it was, here's your hormones, here's your surgery, off you go. Or to borrow Jesus' words, here's your scorpion, here's your snake. This story is far from uncommon. Young people in emotional pain and distress are asking adults for help, but because of our ideological blind spots, we're giving them serpents and scorpions instead of what they really need. Just consider the name given to a new children's pediatric clinic at Akron Children's Hospital. Quote, the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine. Since the fundamental connection between gender and any biological reality has already been severed by our ideological commitments, it's safe to assume that doctors here will affirm, both in their diagnoses and with their prescribed treatments, whatever gender a child claims they are. But what about the Rubies of the world? What about the hundreds of people in that one part of England that were given the wrong treatment for their psychological issues? They are victims of our bad ideas and our blind spots. Too often, in fact, they're forced to be invisible victims, ignored because their very existence challenges the new sexual orthodoxy. Many physicians today simply ignore that up to 80% of children who suffer from gender dysphoria will eventually outgrow those feelings. Even worse, they fail to connect the dots between gender dysphoria and potentially serious mental illnesses that often accompany it, like depression or generalized anxiety disorder, or in Ruby's case, a severe eating disorder. Multiple issues like this spark the chicken and egg question. Does gender dysphoria cause depression and anxiety, or is gender dysphoria a symptom of depression and anxiety? Well, the truth is no one knows with any certainty, but the new gender ideology leads many professionals to proceed with treatment as if gender dysphoria is no disorder at all. So the best treatment, the theory goes, is to affirm the young people's belief that they are transgender and initiate the transition process as soon as possible. This will, supposedly, reduce the inner conflict and in turn help with their other disorders. Well, this neat and tidy theory has a big problem. There's no evidence it works. In fact, evidence points the other way. A 2011 study that followed 324 Swedish men who had undergone sexual reassignment surgery found that 10 to 15 years later, their suicide rate was 20 times higher than that of their peers. Well, today, affirmation passes for care, not because it is, but because it affirms gender ideology, even if it leads to life-altering surgeries or hormonal treatments. If the patient later regrets it or hurts themselves or are miserable, well, hey, we'll just blame it on transphobia. Look, ideas have consequences. Bad ideas have victims. We must ensure that the victims of bad gender ideology are no longer invisible. Their stories must be heard. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. About that weekend, it still looks like a mixed 50-50 kind of spread, with Saturday the better day, the dry day, the fairly sunny day, low pressure soaked with moisture from the Gulf states. We'll head north and bring our region rain, showers, gusty breezes, and maybe some thunder heading into Saturday night and Sunday. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, a fair amount of cloudiness with a spot shower and a high temperature in the 50s. Tonight, cloud cover and a sprinkle, then some clearing, low temps mostly in the upper 30s to the middle 40s. For tomorrow, the sunny skies will be in central New York. Elsewhere, sunshine followed by cloudiness, high in the 50s. Rain and breezes likely Saturday night and Sunday. Sunday could bring a thunderstorm in eastern Pennsylvania. High temperature Sunday in the 60s.
Okie dokie, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report, a Friday edition on Family Life. Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Michael Gear with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Kind of an historic week this week in New York, Jason. Early voting for the first time gets underway tomorrow. Any concerns on your part as far as fraud and abuse? I know this is an off-year election, but any pitfalls that maybe we haven't thought through yet with this?
Ultimately, we are concerned about some of the early voting. A couple of things. One, the late surprises that tend to come out in a campaign. People may not have all the information before they go to vote, so we're concerned about that. And additionally, it allows 10 days for people to bus in people to certain districts to be able to basically have a bus ministry driving people to vote. And we're concerned about that, particularly a lot of these city areas to where there could be a huge Democratic turnout. And I think that was the core of early voting, was buying the Democratic Party more time to work on busing people in.
Yeah, and of course, the turnout rate is historically low, one of the worst in the country. Do you think this is going to do anything to address that?
I think you may see some higher turnout in some urban inner city areas. I'm not so sure you're going to see it in the rural areas, but you'll see it in urban areas.
All right. Hey, well, we're talking politics, Michael. It was a busy week in Pennsylvania for the presidential candidates. Both the president and the guy who wants to be president, Joe Biden, was there. Vice President Mike Pence as well. All of them eyeing Pennsylvania and those 20 electoral votes. What are the issues that are driving interest in Pennsylvania? I know 2020 is still over a year away, but I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of stops in the Keystone State in the coming months.
Well, yes, absolutely. The biggest issue that's driving visits to Pennsylvania is that Pennsylvania is one of the swing states. We haven't had that position for quite some time. 2016, it turned out to be that way, although it wasn't predicted, and Pennsylvania was really the state that put President Trump into office. But some of the issues, many of them are pocketbook issues. I mean, President Trump was in this week talking about the fracking industry, which is big in Pennsylvania. It's provided many, many jobs. And many of the Democrat candidates, I think, if not all of them, called for a complete ban nationally on fracking. And so I think the president's looking to capitalize on that. But other issues, sanctity of life, what judges are going to be appointed, many of the same issues that hit us in 2016 are still of concern to Pennsylvanians.
All right. New York's green light law being challenged for the first time in federal court this week. Erie County suing over this. The clerk there says, hey, this puts me in conflict with federal law. That law is supposed to take effect mid-December. First of all, Jason, what is the green light law? And do you think that the judge here will issue an injunction?
Well, the green light law is essentially the driver's licenses for legal immigrants concern that passed in Albany earlier this year. And there's a lot of concern, especially in the areas of the state where I'm at, regarding giving a government ID to someone who's here illegally. And honestly, going back to the first story we talked about is some election fraud. There's concern over giving government ID that would allow illegal aliens to then register to vote. So we have concerns over that. It would be illegal for them to vote, but they've already demonstrated a willingness to break the law by entering the country illegally. So we'll wait to see what happens with this, but it's difficult to read judges.
Yeah, and we're supposed to get a ruling on that by November. Michael, fetal heartbeat legislation was introduced in Harrisburg, making abortions illegal after a heartbeat's detected. Wondering, two-part question here. What percentage of abortions in your state happen after the heartbeat is detected? And the governor's already promised a veto, so why go through with this in the first place?
Well, number one, on the issue of the number of abortions that take place after the heartbeat is detected in Pennsylvania, that's 12,000. We have 30,000 abortions typically every year in Pennsylvania. 12,000 of those are done after the heartbeat could be detected in that 6 to 7 week time period. So this would be a substantial benefit to protecting human life if this bill were to become law. Of course, Governor Wolf has said that he's going to veto it, and he's raising money on that pledge that he would veto it. The reason that the legislators are moving forward with it and why we supported it at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, number one, it's the right thing to do. I mean, when you have a pregnancy, there are two heartbeats. There are two human lives, two distinct human beings there, and they deserve protection. And as the chief Senate sponsor, Senator Doug Mastriano, said in the press conference, you know, he pointed to the story of William Wilberforce fighting for the end of the slave trade and introduced bill after bill, even though they failed and didn't become law for many years, continued to press to educate the public and to eventually bring an end to the slave trade. And that's what we would like to see with an end to the abortion trade in Pennsylvania and ultimately nationally.
Are they going to vote this fall on this bill? What are the chances realistically of getting a veto-proof majority?
I don't know that they get a veto-proof majority in both the House and the Senate. I do hope for a vote this fall, but it more likely would come to a vote, if at all, would be next year sometime. Okay. Based on the calendar.
Speaking of the sanctity of life issue, Jason, you've endorsed this stillborn legislation that would provide a one-time tax credit to families that have gone through this. What an agonizing thing for a parent to have to deal with. A sense of irony with this bill, though, when it comes to the sponsors of this, if you would explain to our listeners this story.
Yeah, we have a bill introduced in New York State that would allow a child tax credit for the first year of a stillbirth. And so essentially, when those parents have a stillborn child, they would have a $2,000 tax credit, which is the same as if there was a tax credit for the child that is born alive. Why it's a little hypocritical for us, though, and while we support the legislation, the sponsors, though, just a few months ago voted for Governor Cuomo's Abortion Expansion Act. And so the jaded, cynical side of me thinks that this is probably a pushback. They're experiencing, you know, people in the district that are pro-life, that are calling these offices, and they are objecting to the Abortion Expansion Act, and now these legislators can say, yes, but we did this.
Yeah.
And it's just a little ironic that to think that they will hold up the value and the worth of the unborn child when it is stillborn, but not when it isn't.
Yeah. Well, Michael, Planned Parenthood has already announced they're going to spend a lot of money, $45 million on the 2020 election. They're honing in on 9 states to try to elect pro-choice candidates. Is Pennsylvania one of those states?
Well, it absolutely is. And for the same reasons in the earlier question, and we talked about why the president, Mike Pence, and others are coming to Pennsylvania, because we are a swing state. And Planned Parenthood, which is such an aggressive political entity using government funds, really switching it around so that they can use it for politics, they're taking these dollars and advancing their pro-abortion cause to elect pro-abortion politicians like our governor, Tom Wolf, here in Pennsylvania, who got $1.5 million in his first run for governor here. And he's done everything that Planned Parenthood has asked him to do, including pledging, for example, to veto the heartbeat bill. So, yes, they'll be spending that money here. And that's why citizens in Pennsylvania who care about the sanctity of life need to engage in the political process.
Rumors of a rare December session, Jason, in Albany. I know anytime they're in Albany, you get a little nervous. What's this about? What are the likelihood that this would really happen?
Well, I think there is a good shot that we may have a special session in December, because essentially there's a public financing commission that is going to rule on a series of matters. And if legislators do not take the proactive action to come back to Albany and change some of those matters, it will have the force of law. Mm-hmm. And there are some proposals in that public financing commission legislators do not like. And so there's a chance that they will come back and they will vote to overturn those. Also, it will allow them the opportunity to then also vote themselves in a pay raise before 2020 comes into play. And we're beginning to hear rumors that there may be a legislative pay raise in the works this December.
All right. Merry Christmas, everyone. And then finally, Michael, want to talk about a Senate bill that passed this week, the child marriage bill, basically would make marriages under 18 illegal. You've weighed in on this topic before. What are your thoughts on legislation like this?
Well, legislation passed in the House earlier this year, unanimously 195-0, and now in the Senate, a different bill, but the same language passing in the Senate unanimously.
to prohibit marriages before the age of 18. Pennsylvania was one of about 20 states that did allow, in certain circumstances, child marriages. And the reason that we support this ultimately is that those marriages typically have resulted in an adult male marrying a minor child. Mm-hmm. That's not a positive situation, especially when we see that about 80% of them end in divorce, and many of them end up in abusive situations as well. So our ally in the House of Representatives, Jesse Topper, is the sponsor of the House legislation. How they're going to work out the Senate and the House both passing similar but not the exact same legislation remains to be seen.
All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground this week, but that's all the time we have for now. But you both got great websites where folks can go and check you out. In New York State, Jason, where is your site, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And find out more about Michael's group as well. Where can they find you, Michael?
PAFamily.org.
Great job as always. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way every Friday during the noon report. If you missed today's show, you can check it out online anytime. FLN.org/podcasts.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. About that weekend, it still looks like a mixed 50-50 kind of spread, with Saturday the better day, the dry day, the fairly sunny day. Low pressure, soaked with moisture from the Gulf states, will head north and bring our region rain, showers, gusty breezes, and maybe some thunder heading into Saturday night and Sunday. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, a fair amount of cloudiness with a spot shower and a high temperature in the 50s. Tonight, cloud cover and a sprinkle, then some clearing, low temps mostly in the upper 30s to the middle 40s. For tomorrow, the sunny skies will be in central New York. Elsewhere, sunshine followed by cloudiness, high in the 50s. Rain and breezes likely Saturday night and Sunday. Sunday could bring a thunderstorm in eastern Pennsylvania. High temperature Sunday in the 60s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, well, forget about the 9-to-5, folks. A German company is testing out the 5-hour work day. The founder of a small tech consulting firm says his 16 employees come in at 8, then leave at 1. So, how's it done? Well, for starters, small talk is discouraged. Social media is banned. So, too, are phones.
What are you doing?
Oh, you had said that you don't do anything personal during work time, so I'm just making sure.
Oh, wait a minute. So, you're going to time me every time I yawn?
Personal conversation. 17 seconds.
Company email checked just twice a day, and all meetings are required to take no longer than 15 minutes.
He has not stopped working for a second.
The company's founder says because of all of that, he's able to get as much work done in a 5-hour work day as other places get done in 8 hours. And he pays his employees a full-time salary plus all the benefits. Less talk, more action. Sounds good to me. That is the world we live in this Friday. As always, thanks for coming along. Have a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.